Right, I'm sitting here with Lisa Tyler, one of our contributors. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Lisa.
So I'm a third year PhD student at the moment. I'm working on a collaborative doctoral partnership, which is effectively a PhD being pursued between the university and a museum, in my case, the River and Rowing Museum in Henley. And so I'm working on competitive women's rowing since 1945.
Okay, well, good. If you're in your third year, presumably you've had the opportunity to produce some papers, academic papers.
Yes, so I've had two papers published in the last 12 months or so, and I've got another three in the pipeline, which are all under peer review at the moment, so a few things.
That's pretty damn impressive. what are the two papers on?
So the two that have been published already, one was was working on... it was using prosopographical methods, so looking to understand the kind of human profile of an organisation which had one kind of characterisation in the literature which I wanted to challenge. And so I used a different methodology to look at what that group of people might have looked like and therefore what their aims and motivations and that kind of thing might have been. So that was really interesting actually to do. And the other one was much kind of tighter scope, and it was looking at female coaching careers in the early 1970s on the basis of one particular woman who I had interviewed and the reaction to her appointment into quite a conservative or historically quite a conservative organisation.
And in addition to those academic papers, you've done some stuff for Blown Past as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's probably four articles that I've put online, and also a talk that you'll remember giving, because we did it, the two of us and with another of our colleagues, which was recorded and has subsequently been put up as a video content on the site as well.
When you've been writing the Blown Past papers, what's the difference between producing those and producing an academic paper?
I suppose one of the most fundamental ones is kind of the tone and the level of, or the way in which you provide detail. So I think that writing for Playing Past, you're looking to communicate in a more manageable sense for people that aren't actively involved in academia. And I think that's a really important skill for academics as well. And it's part of kind of the fabric of the kind of project that I'm doing, this collaboration with the museum. It's very much saying that academic research needs to be rigorous, it needs to be done properly, but also that we need to consider how we talk about it and the language we use and the platforms that we use as well. So I think that as a writing process, objectively, they're shorter pieces, so you can explore little avenues that you might not be able to dedicate to a whole paper, or it might be that you approach a much bigger topic in a more kind of broad brush sense. I think there's a bit more flexibility in terms of how you argue and the kind of things you might address, because you can pick more, perhaps more topical things. So one of the things that I wrote was about the history of the women's boat race, or in fact, female coxing in the men's boat race, which then we worked with Margaret to be publishing that around the time of the boat race. And so it's a really niche issue. It'd be quite difficult to write an entire academic paper on it, apart from as a broader commentary on how women exist within the men's sport or any of that stuff. As a discrete example, it was great just to have the space to talk about that just discreetly as a particular issue, rather than trying to put it into a much bigger argument about gender and sport and all that kind of stuff.
I know some of the feedback we get from contributors is they like the idea of being able to include illustrations. Did you find that useful?
I think that certainly from the museum's point of view, then, or from my point of view regarding the museum, then I like being able to expose some of their material. It's good for them to see that their stuff is being shared and engaged with in that kind of a way. I think it's a matter of how you're looking to communicate. I wouldn't ordinarily include images in an academic paper. I don't think anything that I've done has really exploited images as probably as much as I could do, to be honest. There are probably lots of things a lot of avenues that you could pursue in that way, and probably that I should. I think for me then it's mainly been an opportunity to showcase some of the stuff that the museum has, and that lives in their archive, not in their public spaces, not in the galleries, and they definitely have responded very positively to that.
Did you find the actual process of submission to Play and Pass fairly easy?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's kind of no barrier at all to me. I think we probably had a preliminary conversation with Margaret about what might be. I think in the early days, I think the first thing that I published on there was probably within 2 or 3 months of starting the PhD. So just kind of assessing whether what I was thinking of submitting was the right ballpark. But then from then on, just providing the content. They've always been very, very quick to respond, constructive in terms of if any changes have had to be made. In fact, I say that very little has ever been tweaked, because it's kind of, it goes in the format that it goes in, and it's not as painful a process as peer review by any stretch.
Very little is. Have you had any feedback or any new contacts or opportunities because of your Play and Pass articles?
So one thing I suppose that did come up spontaneously was there's a rowing history blog called Hear the Boat Sing, and they saw the work that I was doing because of it being published on Playing Past, and subsequently approached us to, firstly, if they could reproduce some of the content, because they thought it was great, but also since then, obviously, I've built that relationship more directly as well. So I've written a couple of things that have been specifically for them, and they have reproduced certainly one of the other things that I've put on Playing Past on their site. So that's been really good. That is a long-established rowing history blog. I actually don't know the traffic, I'm afraid, but it certainly in terms of its Twitter followers and that kind of stuff is fairly popular in rowing circles, and that's very much in the rowing community as opposed to an academic, you know, that is your amateur enthusiast historian, not people pursuing it as an area of study. I think for me as well, certainly in the first year or so, definitely before I had anything else published, it was great to have stuff that I could put in front of people to say, here are some examples of what I'm doing. So the Hear the Boat Sing stuff was great because actually they approached me or us, whereas I've also definitely used the links and the stuff that has gone up there to say, here are some examples of what I'm doing. This is kind of the certainly the issues that I'm interested in, even if they are they're on quite different topics and different time periods and stuff. But it's really great to have examples of stuff that is published that's on a high traffic site that you can show to people as evidence of the work that you've been doing.
Do you think the museum appreciates it?
I think that, yes. I mean, they, again, it gives them, I send them the links that go into things like the trustee reports, and that gives them, in part, as a very immediate way to show what you're doing. It's more accessible to read if you're not in academia. And I think also because they are more compressed, kind of more, they're just more readable straightforwardly. You're looking at shorter, more succinct and more in more accessible language, the writing that's on there. And for, you know, the trustees of the River and Row Museum are a very well-educated crowd. They're senior, you know, they are, they would be perfectly capable of reading an academic paper and getting something out of it. Realistically, if they're just clicking a link on a report, they're more likely to skim through and see the pictures and see the Rowing Museum credited and see, you know, the title and the key points than they are ever to read however many pages of footnotes.
Inevitably. Have you had a chance to look at any of the other contributions?
Yeah, I like it. I kind of cruise. I do cruise it. I see a lot on Twitter, then see that a lot of the stuff gets promoted, and I quite regularly click through because it just kind of piques the interest. I'm not sure that anything has... I can't think of anything that has been very closely related to my area of study, and I can't think of anyone that I've connected with on like a collaborating and work kind of a level. But I think it's great to just get these, a much broader perspective, I guess, on sports and leisure, across time periods, across sports, men, women, regardless. And often then when, so at the forum, for example, or the colloquiums in the past, then you meet people whose stuff you've read and you've got something that you can kind of engage about. Whereas again, in all likelihood, unless I'm really interested in that particular area of 19th century cricket, I probably didn't read their academic paper, if they've produced one, but I might have read their Playing Past article.
Sure. What do you think then, generally, are the benefits for research students of being able to use Playing Past or contribute to Playing Past?
I think for me, like I said, then the opportunity to have stuff that you can share and show on like a proper platform early on is really important. Before having other stuff published elsewhere. I also think, like I was, again, as I've kind of already said, this idea that we need to find more engaging ways to communicate with a broader community of people that might be interested in our work is really important. And I think that academia is increasingly under pressure to show that it's not a closed community only talking to itself. It's not an echo chamber, that it wants to be looking outside of that. And to do that, you need to develop the skills to be able to write in a way that people actually want to read just for interest, and not only to get through peer review.
Okay, Lisa, thank you very much for that. Much appreciated. We look forward to your next article.